This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Jamie Blosser. She is Executive Director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Now, the Santa Fe Art Institute is a really wonderful institution based here in Santa Fe on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And Diane Karp, who was on this program many times, used to be the executive director there, and then Sanjit Sethi was here for a couple of years. And now you are the ED, so welcome.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
And so you are an architect by training and pretty deeply involved with issues of community and social justice. Tell us more about your background and how these different interests have come together.
Thank you. So I've been in Santa Fe for almost 20 years. And so my practice is here in northern New Mexico. And the way that I have practiced architecture is within a community design framework, meaning with much of the work working with community and making sure that their voices are an integrated part of the process. And I think that probably the biggest, most important project to me, sort of as a life's work kind of project, has been my work with OK Wingay, just north of here. And I started there as an Enterprise Rose Fellow, as an emerging architect in 2000, so I had the opportunity to actually work there as an employee through this fellowship, which paid my salary for 3 years, and I learned all about housing development there, and particular issues related to tribes and tribal housing. So that really informed my practice moving forward.
One of the things that's so interesting about tribes and tribal housing historically is that there are certain materials that have been used traditionally, and then at a certain point the U.S. government says, no, you're going to use those materials and so on. How did you think about all that, and how did you listen to what the people wanted? Because, of course, then tastes change and customs change.
So after that project, which was we designed a very integrated community design approach with the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Project that was completed in 2003, I then, after the fellowship, started working with Atkin Olsh and Shade Architects here in town and started their Santa Fe office. They have an amazing preservation arm through Sean Evans, who's here locally now. And so it was an amazing opportunity to take the work we had already done at OK Wingay with Tomasita Duran, who's the executive director there, and start thinking about rehabilitating the traditional Pueblo historic core. So through that process is exactly how we started working with many of the materials. And the question that you just asked, we started with youth, we worked with an oral history project with elders, and we ended up with the tribal council forming a cultural advisory team to advise us on what was appropriate. It came through them, and honestly, it was pretty groundbreaking because we ended up going with them to federal agencies to talk about how federal regulations were, such as the Historic Preservation Secretary of Interior's regulations, may not mesh with the tribe's preservation philosophy. So it was a real moment for the tribe to emphatically put forth its own position and get to a place of being a partner with federal agencies that aren't typically partners. And I think that that's sort of the core of my work. It's why I started the Sustainable Native Communities Collaborative, and it's why I think that designing with community and doing art with communities can be such an empowering practice, because it brings people who are not within a system to the place of being at the table and understanding how they can affect their own lives.
What were some of the specifics of that, like federally mandated or encouraged or whatever, historic preservation ideas versus tribal preservation ideas? Like, what were the differences?
Well, I don't want to bore your listeners, but there were a lot of the federal regulations around the Secretary of Interior standards are looking, for instance, at identifying a particular moment in time, perhaps, where the building is, or elements of the building are deemed very significant or less significant. And that's sort of where you head in terms of the design process, to try to get back to that significant place, to try to respect that as much as possible, as opposed to... So that's a very sort of westernized concept, I think, of historic preservation. I think what we saw at Okwinge, and every tribe is very different, is that they knew that their ancestors built that place. Every viga, every adobe brick had their ancestors' hands on it. And if there's a... And so there wasn't a particular moment to be identified that was more significant than the others. In fact, one person on the cultural advisory team said... Well, now is the most significant moment. And so it really expands to very different worldviews.
Yeah. And are people on, for example, in Okwinge, building with the kind of traditional materials that their ancestors used?
Yes. And so that was a big part of the project, is looking at traditional mud plaster and how we might go back to that. There is... You know, we completed an entire matrix on traditional mud plaster, hybridized systems, and cement stucco. The problem over the years is that the cement stucco that had begun replacing the mud plaster, the traditional plaster, was creating major issues with the adobe. And we saw major catastrophic failure in many situations where the cement just... You know, there was no structural wall of adobe inside that cement encasement. Those two materials do not align well.
Yeah. And so what's the solution? I mean, to get rid of the cement?
Yes, for all of the adobe, we removed the cement stucco that was such a problem, and we replaced it with traditional mud plaster. We did a hybrid, though, so we have a metal cap on the top. That's painted so it's not visible, and we also made sure that the water, we have a drain board at the bottom so the water drains. So it's a hybrid system requiring a little less maintenance.
Very interesting. So that is part of what you have been doing all these years, and you are also you're now working at the Santa Fe Art Institute. What kind of initiatives are you interested in bringing to the Institute, and what of the past initiatives are you building on?
So it's pretty exciting for me, having been very embedded in the public interest design world through the practices I was talking about earlier. There's a real movement nationally and internationally to projects and teams that are working more deeply with community as architecture teams. And what I'm seeing with our work at SFAI is that we're also focusing on what does it mean to work on art in community. And I think that there's a real sort of misperception sometimes about the excellence of art and design that can come of that. I think
What do you mean?
Well, I think that people think it's either fine art or design excellence, or it's in community. And so there's this perceived dichotomy.
Oh, so community art is sort of rough edged and folksy and ragtag and not as good, which is sometimes true.
I think that's sometimes true, but I think there's a misperception that that's all it can be.
Yeah.
And the heroes of mine, the heroes of others at SFAI know for a fact that, you know, you can have both, and that's what we're striving for, is perhaps that tension between the reflection time that our residents need and want, and that's why they come to SFAI many times, and also through the themed residencies that we now do, a desire to really be much more fully engaged in community. And we just had a great roundtable around our current immigration theme yesterday with some local and community partners and residents and staff talking about this exact thing. And I think the tension is a place that is very important to be in. And that's why... you know, our mission is framed as a question, because it's really much about bringing awareness to this as anything else.
Ask us your mission.
How can we seek to cultivate creative practices, engage with diverse communities, and to address the most pressing social issues of our time?
We're talking to Jamie Blosser of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Now, one of the ways that you do this and have always done it is through the residency program, which is really a wonderful program because that building, that gorgeous building, which you, by the way, were a young intern working on.
Yes.
The Legoretta building in what, the late 90s?
Yes, 98, I think it was completed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had the opportunity. I was working at Lloyd and what was then called Lloyd and Trick Architects, who were the architect of record for Ricardo Legoretta.
Yeah. And so that building is full of not only great studios and public spaces, but also rooms where artists and writers and so on can stay for a period of a month or two or 3 months. I'm not sure what the longest period is. And that gives people some real, as you say, reflective time to think about what they're doing and maybe to retreat from wherever it is that they come from.
Right. And I think what a lot of people in Santa Fe don't realize is that we also offer local residencies. And so if you apply through the same application process, there's opportunities to have studio space. You may not need the residential portion, but it's an opportunity to have studio space and also have this cohort of people from all over the world to engage with as you work through some issues in your own work and learn from each other. And that's the beauty, I think, of the residency program, is that we see that synergy. We see new conversations happening through being together.
Now, you have each year a new theme, and residents are brought together with that theme in common and selected on the basis of their work that speaks to that theme. What is it this year?
So we just closed applications for our water rights theme. We're now in the last few months of immigration that will go through June. We have some fantastic immigration residents currently, and our next theme will start in September, and that's water rights. And we had an unprecedented number of applications. We're thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of work are people doing to address this?
To address the water rights?
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to be honest. I have not, literally, it just closed.
Okay.
And I haven't had a chance to look at all of the applications. We had 150, over 150.
Nice.
And so we'll be starting to convene our jury soon on that and announce the applicants or the award winners in March. But what we're seeing and are very excited about is an incredibly diverse group, a lot of local New Mexicans, but also people from all over the world. It's a pretty interesting question because it ties directly to policy. So that's one thing that's a big goal of mine, is to celebrate and promote and advocate for artists and designers and creative practitioners as leaders and creators and catalysts to build a more just society. And that's really the basis, I think, of the thematic residency and why we're trying to tie water rights, not just water, which is a much bigger elemental source, but water rights.
And when you say this is all tied to policy, what is the relationship between artistic expression and what eventually becomes policy or policy change?
That's a very interesting place where we find ourselves, because not everyone, we don't say you need to come here and focus on policy at all. In fact, we like the diversity. We see farmers apply, we see activists apply, we see fine artists apply, we see designers and landscape architects apply, conservationists. So people, the great thing is that people are coming at this theme from very different, diverse places. And going back to what it means, perhaps, to be in residency with that is you get this sort of very transdisciplinary approach from very different perspectives that I think can help to really look at creative solutions. And so I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Well, I mean, it seems like there's a big process in society where artists and activists are on the front edge of new thinking, and then eventually it becomes mainstream, and then it becomes politics, and then new things get passed, and that can be a period of years or decades or whatever. But it's part of some kind of big ecosystem where things are interconnected in ways that you can't always really make those links, but they are there.
And what's so fascinating, I feel like there's a major zeitgeist going on, at least in the U.S., where there's a big opening by people of many different disciplines looking to the arts and the creative sector for solutions. So I went to PolicyLink, had an equity summit in L.A. in October, and what was completely fascinating is that this policy conference around equity, every single session, not just the keynote, but every session had started with either a poem or a performance. And they also had very specific sessions around arts and culture and equity. So, and then, you know, so then you see the city of LA hiring artists to work with their traffic engineers to reduce traffic deaths. And so there's a lot happening right now. Art Place has this huge creative placemaking initiative and is looking at very innovative, transformative approaches with artists in partnership with other organizations.
I love the idea of artists and engineers working together, and it's too bad that engineers don't always get more art training themselves. I think in other countries they do a little bit more, because it would be such a natural fit if you think about it.
And that's why we don't limit who can apply for a residency, because we love having those different perspectives. In fact, yesterday at the roundtable, we had our artists in residence who are all doing very different things. We also had health practitioners and lawyers in the room. So you get very different perspectives, and I feel like it's our role at SFAI to hold that dialogue, which can sometimes be uncomfortable. But I think that's where a real shift can happen.
When you say it can sometimes be uncomfortable, what kinds of conflicts arise when you have those people of different disciplines together?
Well, we all have different languages, and we all have different methodologies and ways we approach the work. I also think that two things. One, not many people really understand how much research and rigor goes into making art, and it's significant, and that's, I think, what we can provide in terms of space and time at SFAI. But also, when we're talking about social impact and social justice, we have to really ask ourselves, you know, what certain words mean and define things like race and equity and justice and power and privilege. These are all very personally uncomfortable for most of us. And so to hold a space where we're all talking about it from different perspectives.
It's such an interesting thing when people talk about race and equity and justice and equality and all of those things, because we're in this point of trying to acknowledge at the same time the fact that there is vicious racism and oppression in the United States of America, as probably everywhere else, and at the same time that you can't really make sweeping generalizations about it, and that not all of one group are oppressed or not all of the other group are oppressors. And it gets framed that way sometimes in the kinds of heated arguments that people have.
Well, and it does require all of us, to have a little bit more training on how to talk about it and have much more self-awareness, and not those of us who are privileged to not get to a place of defensiveness, but really think through and have empathy for every aspect of the situation.
You do at SFAI a program called, I think it's called SFAI 140, and it's an evening in which there's a series of people who have 140 seconds, which is what, 2 minutes and change, to talk about with slides anything of their choosing. And those are really rollicking, amazing nights. Do you have those coming? Do you have any of those coming up?
Thank you. Yes, we have our March SFAI 140 will be March 23rd. And you're right, they're very fun. It's very daunting to try to put your work into 2 minutes and 20 seconds, but what we see is that it's a really interesting mashup of residents and community partners and leaders, and it really provides a very interesting lens for the audience to see all of the different, diverse, engaging, vibrant work that's happening. And also, you know, I was a presenter at the first SFAI 140. Sanjeet asked me to present. And, of course, I thought that trying to do that was just sadistic and trying to get all of, you know, everything into 2 minutes and 20 seconds was impossible. But what I realize, and I've talked to other people who presented, it's a way to distill what you do. And I've used that moving forward in how I think about my practice. So
very interesting. Jamie Blosser is executive director of the Santa Fe Art Institute. They're on the web at sfai.org. The number over there is 424-5050. Is there anything else you want to let people know before we go?
I would love to talk. You know, we're a 30-year-old institution, and we're really looking at the next 30 years. I'm so impressed at the ability for the board, the staff, everyone to be able to be within this sort of established institution, but also be able to take risks in terms of being relevant and moving forward with today's issues and how we might revise our programming. In that way, I find it to be a pretty unique place for a 30-year institution to be. And really, our goal is to be a national leader, but also looked at more as a community resource. I think that we are less known locally than we are perhaps nationally or even internationally. And it's really my goal to bring us into more civic engagement and to really work with our community partners more directly on what they need, in particular perhaps around our themes. But to that end, we're working on a new program that I'm excited about called Community Works. And that is going to be community-led programming that we'd like to offer on a monthly basis, where we will eventually put a call out to our community partners for asking them what are their needs, whether it's space, time, working on a particular issue, and we would help curate an event around that. So it could be anything from a roundtable to a lecture to a workshop to a pinup or a rehearsal. And I'm very excited to see what might come of that, in particular as it relates to our themes. And SFAI Works is a new program that we just finished our first cohort last fall, and it was hugely successful. And so we're looking forward to moving forward the second curriculum. It's an incubator project specifically looking at creative entrepreneurs in the creative sector. And we had the Dreamers Project, Curators Without Borders, and Tall Foods all participated in that. And we had a very successful launch and leap event in December, and really grateful to all of the supporters of that program. I think that moving forward, it'll be really nice to see how an incubator evolves within an arts organization.
Good. Well, let us keep in touch and continue to talk about the work that you're doing at the Santa Fe Art Institute, a wonderful institution. Jamie Blosser is the executive director. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.